Good morning and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Larry Kay. I'll be the host for the presentation this morning. I'm calling from Chicago, Illinois. Today is Sunday, January 25th, 2026. Let me give you the share ID numbers for Friday, January 23rd. For the 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting, that number is 23,152. That's 23152. And for the 10 a.m. meeting on Friday, 23,153. That's 23153. This morning, A Vision for You presents, "My Program is Like a Toddler." You know, to be brought to a recovered state of being, this thing we call recovered, and maintain that condition of freedom, well, that's going to require infinite care. It's going to require unbounded attention. And really, just like the construction of a building, you know, I mean, I've never built anything, but I can imagine. You construct a building, the foundation, if it's poorly laid, the superstructure, what comes next, is eventually that'll crumble as well. And, you know, we study the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous because our collective experience over, well, some 90 years since this textbook was published demonstrates it's effective. It's effective in helping people like you and me overcome an illness that the big book says only a spiritual experience will conquer. And the book is not just some antiquated sort of old prose. It offers a framework for recovery. It lays out the three things that you'll ultimately need to recover. It's simple, really. And to understand these three things is going to be the difference between walking through the door number one that we'll call recovery, or continuing, as we always have, to walk through door number two, which is disease and all its forms, all its manifestations. We know that door really well, right? And so what do we have to understand? We have to understand the problem first, the problem, lack of power. And second, we have to understand the solution to that problem, which, you know, clearly is going to be access or a relationship to power. And the third thing we're going to need is, well, how are we going to bring that solution to light? In other words, how is that solution going to become manifest? Well, that's going to be the application of the 12 steps. And I would offer to you that those three things are more than just a possible kind of option for people like you and me. Those three things will save your life. What's the problem? What's the solution to the problem? And how do I bring that solution to light? Now, because there's been an incredible amount of erroneous, well-intentioned information spread throughout AA and certainly OA since this book was published in 1939. I mean, those things are going to happen. It's still happening. It's really important that we separate the true from the false, right? That after all, the big book tells us that we're dealing with more than just an inconvenient, you know, challenging set of circumstances. We're dealing with a deadly disease. Remember, the big book calls what we're up against as cunning, it's baffling, it's powerful. And the malady is not just inconvenient, it's described as grave, deadly. In other words, deadly, right? So it's incumbent upon us to respect the grave nature of our illness. And, you know, the steps are a sequential pathway to ultimate freedom. But before I hand it off to Julie, let's remember that freedom is not free. You know, a price has to be paid. How free do I want to be? You know, what am I going to pay half the price? Well, that's going to avail me not a whole lot. We have to move from a self-centered consciousness to a God-centered consciousness, or perhaps an other-centered consciousness. And that's going to come by way of the steps, having this spiritual transformation. So joining us this morning to share her journey in navigating through the 12 steps and undergoing a spiritual awakening is Julie B. from Ohio. And Julie, J-U-L-I-E, if you're looking for Julie B. from Ohio. And Julie's committed to the 12 steps and 12 traditions as a way of life. So it's with much gratitude that we welcome Julie D. to the line this morning. Good morning, Julie.
Yay. Thank you. Thank you, Larry K. I
You
appreciate you.
bet.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm Julie B. I'm from Akron. I'm from Ohio, and it's a snow globe here right now. Oh, wow. I just feel really grateful to be with you guys. I'm with you daily. I listen to you. I have you in my kitchen when I'm getting ready. I have you in my car. You guys are my companions. I just love you. I am really excited about so this title of the special edition, my program is like a toddler. I was having this thought when I was packing my food, and it's like a whole, like there's containers and there's a bag with me, and it's like this is almost like I have a child. Like I need special accommodations here. And so that really has kind of been the driving force of this topic. It could be very polarizing. I probably will not do a great job at explaining it. But just know that it's all about sort of like that I'm a separate entity, like me as a holic, like me as being a compulsive overeater. Like I am different and I have to live differently. Just feeling really grateful. So what I would love to start with is something that I do before meetings, and it's pray. And it's actually, I'm just going to read this like prayer that I have. I try to do a lot of things like before I really make a lot of movements, I like to pray. And so I'll just ask God, we just pray for your protection over this meeting, and please open our hearts and our minds and close our mouths. Usually that's what I say whenever I go into a meeting. I need what this meeting has. Please help me to focus on what is being said instead of noticing who is saying it, realizing that judgment is from my disease. And please take away that judgment, God. Help me set aside what I think I know about this meeting, about my fellows, and about the program. And God, please help me to detach from anything that does not support my recovery. I pray that you help me be a kind and loving presence here to give back to a community that has given me so much. For a new experience, please help me to see the truth, to be the truth, and to speak the truth a day at a time. Thank you, God, for OA. Ooh, I don't even know where I'd be without OA. Don't even get me started. Gosh, the voice is shaking already. I know that that's when I need to talk it even more. So, my time in OA now, just to like give you a picture of me now, I'm like a little over 2 years abstinent. I live in like Northeast Ohio. I go to, and we have like a couple in-person meetings here. That's really where I found my recovery was going into, it was a Wednesday night meeting just down the street. That's where I found my first sponsor. And I found home there. I kind of kept frequenting it. I'd come once a month, and then I would come, twice, and I would see some people that I kind of was like, oh, I kind of like them, or she's pretty funny, and she's pretty. She just went on a cruise. Like, it's just kind of the message started to kind of come to me, and there was some beautiful recovery in that room, and it no longer meets in this area, but I just have so much wisdom, so much wisdom. They really introduced me to what was abstinence, what was my crazy diet thinking versus like what recovery was. And that was my introduction to the steps. And there's actually another meeting that is in this area that I'm so grateful to say that I helped to, kind of ignite, because it's so important. I just think the in-person meetings as well as our phone calls and our virtual meetings are important. I won't get on a soapbox about it, but so that's what my life looks like as far as my meeting, like my attendance. A lot of times I'm listening to this recording, and I usually do at least that one in-person meeting a week, and there's another one as well in the area. Service is a big part of my program now too. I'm a treasurer for that meeting, for the in-person meeting. And then I also took on an intergroup treasury position, which if you want to be stretched to the max and pressed, just that kind of like, I'm underqualified, I don't know if I can do this, and I still don't. And I really still don't. And what that service is teaching me, being in the inner group as a treasurer, is saying uncle and saying I need help. And what I am met with, and I don't know if it's because it's OA, but I am met with such kindness and people saying, hey, I can help you with that. You want you do you like what is it that you need? And what's so beautiful about asking for help in this scenario with the inner group and with the service is that I'm filled up with a compliment, like from the person that's helping me. They'll say, I love that, like I inspired someone because I asked for help. I don't know it all. And that's a part of my disease. I want to appear like I do. So yeah, just the service is awesome. I just really love to be of service where I can. As far as like what it was like, for me in my disease, and by the way, like I'm gonna get to why the disease is like a toddler. It's gonna include, the defiance of a toddler. Like, I don't want to. I don't wanna commit my food. I don't wanna read. I don't wanna listen to the podcast, the need for structure, the need for the toddler to have a schedule a little bit, or a structure of here and during the day, this is what's going to happen. This is what needs to happen in order. I know you don't want to do this. It's almost like I have to talk to my program, talk to myself, talk to my disease. Like, I know you don't want to do this, and that's okay, but we're going to do it anyway. Okay. And if we don't feel like it, we're going to ask for help. And that comes through prayer, that comes through admitting powerlessness, which don't even get me started on powerlessness. I love that subject. We will get there. I'm going to jot that down. I wake up early. Like the toddler, the program, the toddler is something that I have to wake up early for. I have to make time for it in the morning. I have to spend time in prayer and meditation. And also, the toddler is not the adult in the room. So a lot of times my decisions or what I think I know is not actually what's the best, like what is the best for all, or the decision or the choice that needs to be made. A lot of times my program is like not going something alone. And a toddler is not going to go through life alone. A toddler is going to say, like, does this sound good? Can I do this? And I do that with you guys. Like, I call you and I say, hey, I'm turning this over. I need to talk to somebody about it, or I'll text. I text my sponsor, or I text somebody before I do something. It's that power of the pause. So that's just a little bit of like the the toddler part. But OA, it's going to be so hard for me, by the way, not to get emotional when I talk about OA, because I just love it. I just love it. It has just saved so many parts of my life, and it continues to. And I'm also like kind of bitter about it, because I feel different ways about it, that I have to be in OA. There's a level of like non-acceptance a little bit too. But I'm somewhat visual, so in describing how it was for me, like before OA, what I can imagine, like a picture, is me in my apartment. It's really dark. My big TV is on, and on my coffee table is just like a bunch of food, just like a bunch of like, not even like easy, it could just be whatever kind of food. It was majority of like desserts and like, I mean, who knows, just every like fast food, all of it. It was just on, like spewed on my coffee table. I can imagine that. I can imagine being in like pajamas for a few days, like several days. There's like food stains on my shirt. I can imagine me like picking up weights that I have in my apartment, and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna like work it off. That was always my math before OA, was that like whatever I eat, I just have to work out for. Like, I don't know, like I think that was probably a magazine or a friend in middle school or something that put that into my mind. And that's really a lot of my original thinking was just the math of it, is if I eat this and I work out, then I'll be okay. Doesn't really work that way. Definitely does not. What doing that did for me was the the over exercising. Like I remember being a part of like I had joined a weight loss program, and it was really far from my apartment where I was living. And I lived in Southern California at the time, and I ran like it was like 2 hours or something, 2 or 3 hours. Like I just in my disease, when my compulsive overeating brain is making the decisions, it's going to say that exercising for 3 hours straight is okay, and that's good. And then when I come home, I can just eat whatever I want to. Well, it would be cool if that worked. Like that would have been really great, but it just didn't work. And the program has gotten me down, I think, like 60 pounds. It's so great because it doesn't rule my life. Like that number does not rule my life anymore. And it's not just, for me, it wasn't just the food. Oh my gosh, it was so much of the food though. The food like ruled my life, and I wanted to be alone with the food all the time. But it was also the craziness of now, like the weight loss stuff, right? The weight loss schemes, the pills, the shakes, the weigh-in pays, I even had trainers. I even had women that I found online that I'm like, hey, if she can do this, like I should just go and see her. I'm going to visit her, and it just the insanity of that, and being able to do stuff for a little while, but then slowly, and like not seeing like where I was really messing myself up. Now I follow a food plan, and I can choose so many different things to go inside of this food plan. But like before, I wasn't giving myself, I truly wasn't nourishing my body. Like I thought if I just don't eat, and then at 2 o'clock I'll pick something up, and then I'll be fine, and then I'll be okay, or I'll just start to like nibble and like snack and stuff. Well, my body is not getting nutritionally what it needs. So on some level, whenever I'm actually ending up overeating, I'm not, I'm trying to make that deficit. I'm trying to fill that deficit. Oh yeah. I heard it said one time in a meeting that it was like, there's 40 diet programs, and I've tried 39 of them. And I so think that about myself. Like I just have tried, just all of it, and being so concerned. Like when you took a picture of me, I was the one behind your phone going, "Can I see? I want to see that. Oh my gosh, look at, oh my, oh look at this." And even if I wasn't saying that out loud, I was saying it internally, and I was so body focused that I couldn't be out in the world and like really enjoy. I had to feel like I had to suck it in. I had to kind of like maneuver and my clothes, like, but also too, if you, I would love, like truly love to meet you. I've been to the birthday a couple times, but I love you guys. And if you ever, I'm a very tall person, and that's the thing too, is that I feel like I hold weight pretty well. Like, I could always kind of hide it. And that's the thing too, being in like a larger family, like my family is very large, and so me compared to them was not a problem. I looked normal compared to my family, but the insanity was in my head. And just being so overly self-conscious and always wanting to lose weight, whatever that scale said, I believe that my disease wants me at zero. Like, so even as I am in OA and I'm in a healthy weight range, like I'm in a range, within a handful of pounds. And so what that helps me to do is not go under it. And I'll even talk to my nutritionist, my dietitian, and I'll be like, can we like lower the range? Like, can we get do it like a little bit lower? Because my disease wants me at zero. And so she has to remind me that even like being underweight for me is red flag. So that's just sort of like what it looked like a little bit. There's so many more things I can just remember fleeing from employment after before like leaving work early to go and like go to a restaurant. I imagine myself at a bar like and just sitting there and like ordering the main course and then maybe like a couple things on the side and then a couple beverages, you know, and just kind of being like just feeling so bad and going and all the while this is against what it is that I really want. And I want to be healthy. I want to have a lean body. And I'm just so grateful to say that is the gift. Like if I had to say, did OA give me what I came in for? 110%. I live in a healthy body. I do not look at pictures and put myself down. I am like, I'm telling you, I'm so grateful to say that when I look at when I see myself, I'm like, wow, like girl, you got it go. Like I really very there's no humility in that. So I'm not even gonna really try to say that, but like OA has given me, you know, I did come in for vanity. I wanted to lose weight. I wanted to feel good. But what it has also given me is the reprieve of thinking about it. The reprieve from thinking about being skinny and being fit and attractive. Like it's just given me that reprieve and it's just been given. I believe that abstinence is a gift and I have asked God for abstinence. I've asked God for the desire to do what it is that needs done to have that recovery. Willingness is a huge part of my story and just praying for that. Just God, please make me willing. Like I don't want to do these things. Ooh. Thank you guys. Just love you. Where do I want to go now? Okay. So in thinking about powerless, you know, there's been I'm also a toddler in that I don't always understand the biggest words that are used, and we'll use words like surrender. And oh my gosh, there's so many in the big book that I'm like, okay, can I please like Google search this of what other words I can use? Like I always need to have a thesaurus nearby, because what I have found in my program that really helps me is coming up with different meanings, like the actual meanings, but just different words for different things. And so for powerless, you know, I didn't always know what that meant. And so how can I admit that I'm powerless whenever I don't even know what it means? And so just wanting to share a couple alternate words that I have there are overwhelmed. So when I think of like I'm powerless over this thing, I'm overwhelmed by it. I'm overwhelmed. It's too much. I'm like my hands are in the air. It's too much, God. Like I'm overwhelmed. I'm totally overwhelmed. I'm powerless over this. And my life is unmanageable when I'm trying to control it. And so for me, now what I admit I'm powerless over in current days are usually the attitudes of someone else. I am so overwhelmed and powerless over the anger, the attitude of another person. It's something within my makeup that I want to try to fix, or that I'm going to take the blame, or that I'm trying to now like be the good person around them. And so I'm powerless. And so what happens is when I notice this, here's how I have found that is like really helpful for me. So when I notice this, that I'm so hyper focused on what someone else is doing or how they're coming across to me or what they have said to me, okay, God, I'm powerless. Like my hands are up, uncle. I can't do it. But then what it is that I do then is that I turn, like, and this is in the, you know, I turn to the Father of light and all things, you know, I turn to God and I'm for me, this is what it looks like for me. Okay. When I realize that someone's like they're kind of taking over my whole things, I'm like, okay, I'm powerless. And what I do is I get in a prayer posture. And for me, right now, it's on my knees. I go into the bathroom, I'm on my knees. I go to a little place in my office, I'm on my knees. Now, I do really find that I need to have a lot more prayer postures. Like one also is like just looking up and like my hands open, like God, I'm powerless. Like I'm going down and I'm overwhelmed. And so I'm asking God, like the prayer, I have a prayer for powerless, which I know you're not surprised because I have prayers for everything. But it's basically just saying it's like a first step prayer. I admit that I'm powerless over this thing. You know, and for my food addiction, my compulsive overeating, I had to admit that I am powerless. I don't know how to do this. I can't stay on a food plan. I can't stay on a diet. Like I don't have the answer. I'm going down. Like I am overwhelmed. And I admit, God, that my life is unmanageable. It's crazy. Help me. Like just help me, God. Like help me to know what this means, and please just remove the denial. So that's basically what the first step prayer is I admit that I'm powerless over my food addiction. I admit that my life is unmanageable when I try to control it, and help me this day to understand the true meaning of powerlessness and remove from me all denial of my addiction. Another visual that I picture with powerless is being in a body of water. And by the edge, there's people. Like there's people on the edge of the water, but like I'm in the water and I'm, oh no, I'm going down. Like I'm sinking. I am sinking. Whatever it is, it's bringing me down. And admitting that I'm powerless is putting my hands up in the air and saying, I need help. I need help. And I believe that my higher power is among those people and comes and jumps in that water and he rescues me. It's so powerful. Whatever your visual, oh, it's just so powerful. So that to me is powerless, and that is how I first step every day. You know, like throughout the, like that's to me like admitting that I'm powerless over it, and the relief that comes when I get up from that posture, and I'm given my next right actions instead. You know, instead, why don't you go grab some water, or instead, why don't you go? I mean, there's just so many different things that higher power will then put into my mind instead of what it is that I'm, the obsession over what it is that is overtaking me. Okay, so my program is like a toddler. So the first thing that I mentioned first was that, you know, packing my food is a huge part of my program. If you know me, or if you're around me here in Ohio, and you're like, if you were to wake up with me every day, like we're in the kitchen, we are, you know, there's a lot of different things that I've realized, like, you know, as much making it easy on myself, you know I'm going to need a bunch of like vegetables, you know, so, and I won't go into too much of the types of food. I know that we all have, we are all so individual. We're all so, like your food plan is your food plan. Mine looks like packing my food with me. So if I know that I'm going to be at work for 8 hours, I know within that time frame, because I've worked with my dietitian, that I'm going to need to eat it X and like this time and this time. So I'm packing my food. And I have, like, my sister, she got me like this gorgeous lunchbox for one of the gifts for my birthday. Like, I love that. Like, I'm always bringing at least like one meal with me. Like, I don't want to ever, I think a big part of my disease was like having the excuse that I'm just like out and about and I can't make it home, or, you know, I can't eat healthy on the go kind of thing. Well, that's not a part of like my story anymore. So I'm always packing my food. Always. I have so many little containers. You know, getting really honest about my food too, with my sponsor, when I first started like working and figuring out, you know, what are my, you know, we put my categories into like red light, green light, yellow light. Does that remind you of a toddler at all? Like when you would play that in school. So, you know, the foods that are okay for me that I can have, like that are, they don't cause this allergy. They don't cause this obsession of my mind to now want to exercise until like midnight tonight. You know, the yellow light foods, like maybe it is an issue. Maybe like when I notice I want a little bit more of it, or it almost tastes too good. Like my whole focus in life is now on that food. Or is it red, where, you know, it's just totally off limits. You know, you know, you've had, like, I know I've had way too much of something in my whole life. Like that's something too, whenever someone's like, are you sure you don't want, you know, if we're at a restaurant or a party or something, and someone's like, are you sure you don't want this? Like if it's a birthday and it's their dessert and stuff, and I'm like, oh no, I've had enough of that for several lifetimes. You know, and it's just kind of putting some humor into it, but it's like, it's actually true. Like the times I've had, you know, the different types of food is definitely enough for lifetimes. And I also had to get really serious about the foods that if I combined, like help, like my yellow and green light foods, that if I combine them, it becomes a red light. I had to get really honest about that. And I started to realize, you know, once I started working the program and realizing my food, like my safe foods and all that, my abstinent foods. It took a little while. It didn't take forever. Because I want to be honest. Honesty is like the core, the absolute foundation of my program. It was actually a word of the year a couple years ago. And if you don't have a word of the year, it's still January. I highly recommend it. But honesty was my word. And man, it kicked my butt, but it was so good because I really had to be honest. Just because I told my sponsor that's the food I was having, and it may be fine for her, but it's causing an obsession for me. I'm now looking way too forward to it. I'm now, it's not enough on my plate. Also, seasoning started to do that to me. that kind of sucked. Like just kicking my butt a little bit, really getting into the behaviors too. If I can't sit down at my meal without getting back into the kitchen five times to put all the different seasonings, it's talking back to the disease and going, okay, I know you want something different right now. Maybe it's not tasting like the best dish you've ever had, but tomorrow when you plan your food out, it's going to be okay. Like you can just, that'll be on your food plan for tomorrow. That'll be on tomorrow's menu. We're going to eat right now what we've already told another adult that we're going to do. And that's me talking back to my program. That's me talking back to my disease and really giving her love and going, I get it. Like it maybe doesn't taste that good. And, old Julie would just go to the kitchen five different times. Well, there's no peace in that. There's no peace in that. Come on. That sucked. And that's a part of my disease too, is that all the times that I'd be back and forth from the living room to the kitchen, like, That was definitely a track on my carpet, in my apartment. Anyway, okay, next will be waking up early for my program, and treating, like, that's very similar to having a small one too. Oh, and by the way, I'm not a biological mom. Like, I don't actually know what it is truly to take care of a toddler, but I'm an aunt and I'm also a stepmom. And so I do understand, like, that they're separate from me. They're a separate entity, and they do require care. So I wake when I say I wake up early for my program and for this, it's a bottom line has to happen every single day is time spent with God. It has to happen. If I don't have that happen in the morning, I am making up for it all day. And I'm suffering, and the people around me are probably suffering. And it's to realign, it's to be in tune, to be one with God. And my disease wants to put the five resentments that I have before doing that. And I can wake up feeling so angry and resentful still. I mean, even in the 2+ years of abstinence, I still really do struggle. And you guys have been so great to take 10 steps for me, to work the steps, different steps with me. I still really do struggle with anger and resentment, but I'm really grateful to say that like other parts of the disease, it's being lifted. It's not as intense, and I'm realizing different parts about it. And when I'm angry, I'm in like non-acceptance. And then acceptance has meanings for me of like non-resistance and neutrality. Like, can I put those different words into words like acceptance? That was a big word that I was powerless over. But I wake up early for my disease. So what that looks like is at least like 20 to 30 minutes. Sometimes, I mean, there's been stages of my program where like I will just be in the morning time, like an hour and a half, not only in meditation, but writing and reading. Like I love, for me, I love scripture. I love to be a part of like a Bible study. But I also will, or I'll read, I'll be on like a 11 step like kick. And I'm reading from our 12 and 12s and really, really washing my brain a lot of the time of like the wisdom as opposed to like being fearful. I'm just going to take just a small break. Give me just one moment. Oh. Just a little water break. Oh, but just really taking that time, that same time that I probably would take with a toddler of like getting them dressed and like, let's brush their hair. Let's check in with them, And then also really truly asking God, like, how is it that you want me to live today? That's a huge part of it. Like, I am not the adult in the room, and I have got to ask for my director, my provider, my creator. I have to ask him, what is it that you want me to do? And so this brings me to our On Awakening. And I would love to read this a little bit with us. So this is On Awakening. It's in the big book, 86 and 87. And I believe I just grabbed it from there, but a lot of times I make notes, so we'll see. Okay. On Awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is clear of wrong motives. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here, we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought, or a decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. Now, what I really love, so within that, basically, as it goes down just a little bit, it's like what I call like the next right action. And so I have, so during the day, so not just, it's not just in the mornings, because, you know, by 9 a.m., I've gotten 3 emails that I'm totally overwhelmed by. I don't know how to read that tone. I'm going to assume the worst probably. Like, so now I need to know what to do. And so I've also like, there's a next right action prayer, and it's basically just repeating like what that truth is of just, you know, as I go through the day, I pause, God, I'm agitated, I'm doubtful, and I ask you for the next right action, the next right thought. And then I just kind of quiet, you know, I find somewhere where I can just be alone and just ask God, like, please, what is my next right action? And I pause long enough for God to give me that. And usually it's like about a minute. I mean, I'm not very patient with stuff. So it's usually about a minute, or there'll be some pictures that are coming to mind of what it is that I need to now focus on instead. Grab my water again. I hope this is helpful. That's okay. Okay. So, yeah. Just really not being the adult in the room, like just really under really realizing that, and in these moments of like making these like really big decisions, you know, whether it be with a job or even a conversation, like even just sending a text to someone, I believe is like an action of like, hey, I'm overwhelmed by this, and I also know that I can't help my own self. I can't get myself out of that body of water. I have to ask for help. And you know, the step two is like, I believe that that help exists. I believe that my higher power is on the side of that water, and he's going to come and get me. And I'm going to decide that that's like, you know, anyway, I don't want to get, I'm really not good at like repeating all the steps and all the things, but, you know, just the need for structure and chaos as well with my program, the need for structure so that chaos does not exist is really what it is. And like a little kid, like it's actually helpful to have boundaries. It's helpful to have a little bit of a schedule, or to know like, okay, today Julie needs to get in her 3 calls. Like I got to do my 3 outreach calls. Julie needs to have her morning time. She's going to have her 3 meals. I also have a snack in there. That's from my nutritionist. Like she has those. And also too, I want to mention that like in the disease, my meals never stopped. There was never a time when my meal like was started and stopped. It was just a continuation. It was a graze. It was a, sometimes it wasn't a graze. It was just, it started out with a bang. Like it started out like ordering takeout from a restaurant. Like that was my breakfast. Like, you know, but now I know when my meal starts because I have prepped it. It's in front of me. What I do too, as a step one, action is that I look at, before I eat, I look at what I have committed to my sponsor. I commit myself to my sponsor the night before. That's just what has been working for me. I may adjust it to the date, like the morning of, but it, basically it's committing before I am eating. Like it's before, not just before before I'm eating, but basically like before, just before I'm eating. Okay, anyway, so I commit my food the night before to my sponsor. And then before I eat, I'm sitting down and I look at the text that I have sent her and I go, okay, for breakfast, I know for sure that I did this. I put in here this, this, and this. Is that what I have in front of me? I'm just double checking. There's a lot of double checking too. Because if there were to be something that I have like, I just, my disease will latch on to a mistake. And so I wanted to double check, you know, and then what I do is I also say a prayer before I eat. And this is not an original. None of my ideas are original. I'm sure we all really, like, everything that I've gotten truly has been you guys sharing with me. And so I say a prayer before and I say a prayer after the meal. And I say something to the lines of, God, thank you for creating this meal, for the time set aside to eat it, the willingness to put it together, and the effort to grab and to gather the food. And please allow this food to feed recovery and not addiction. Allow it to give me the strength to do your will, the knowledge of your will, and the willingness to do your will. Help me to relax and take it easy. And please take over the management of my life and everything about me. And that line, please take over the management of my life and everything about me, is a beautiful line from Dr. Bob's third step prayer. That line just makes me want to weep. Like, it's just so beautiful. Like, please take over the management of my life and everything about me. And something really cool that Dr. Bob and I share is that we live in the same neighborhood. And it's interesting to think of the places, or at least the general places that maybe he hung out and was struggling. And I'm just so, so grateful to live really close to there. And though I don't pass his house specifically when I'm driving to work or in the community, I'm telling you, I'm right there and I pass his house, like pass his street daily. Like it's very cool. It's very cool. And that kind of brings me to, so the first line of that prayer, and then I'll start to wrap up. That first line of that prayer was, thank you for the time set aside to eat it. This is something that is so important to me that I struggle with in our lives, like in society, is like, okay, so for me, I had to, my new workplace, they didn't really honor setting aside break times and lunch times. And that does not work for me. That does not work for this little toddler who now needs this special accommodation. She has food allergies. She has the way that I think about my program, it's like, I have an allergy, I have an illness, I have a disease, I have to have an accommodation. So I tried everything like within my own power of like asking, trying to tell my coworkers like, hey, like, you know, I got to step away sometimes, you know, I got to have like every 3 to 5 hours, I know I have to have something, like that's a part of my food plan. And it just wasn't getting like taking, it just wasn't being seen as like a serious thing. And I had to escalate it to, you know, I talked to my supervisor and I said, because of, I forget what it was, but you know, very professionally, like I basically just asked to have like accommodations, the same way that someone who has another illness or who unfortunately has something that's disabled, like they would have to have an accommodation in order to do their job. And luckily, like from doctor's visits past, it was noted that I have a food plan, you know, because I'm recovering from, I think the terms are like disordered eating or whatever it was. But basically I have this accommodation now to where I'm able to step away when I need to. And for me, and maybe for someone normal, like eating and stepping away, like to grab something to eat is just like using the restroom. Like it's that habitual. It's that like just necessary. And so that's how I've had to like bring it to the workplace too. And I would be happy to talk to anybody that's struggling with that, because that is a real not cool problem that we have where we don't honor the work, sometimes workplaces or people or whatever just don't honor the actual need to set aside and to eat. So it's a big thing. I won't get on another soapbox about it. But I think that kind of brings me to my time, and I just really want to say thank you. And yeah, I think that's all I have. Thank you. I'm Julie B.
Hey, Julie. Thanks so much for your just authentic, down-to-earth insights on this. And we thank you for enriching the Vision for You archives with your presentation this morning. So before we transition to our Q&A, couple of things. First, let me give you the share ID for Julie B's presentation this morning. That number is 23,156. That's 23156. And then the second thing is, please stick around till the end of the program. We'll ask Julie for her contact information at that point. If you care to reach out to her directly, we'll do that. So with that in mind, let's transition over to Q&A. If you have a question for Julie, questions only, please press star one and give me your first name, and we'll line up some questions for Julie if you have them. Who's got a question?
Felicia S. from New Jersey.
Gotcha, Felicia. Who else?
Dorita.
Esther.
Hi, Dorita, and I got you, Esther. Got Esther and Dorita. Anybody else?
Ted from New Jersey.
Rhonda from Ohio.
Yeah, Ted
from
New Jersey.
Ohio? Okay, gotcha, Ted. And who is from Ohio?
Rhonda from Ohio.
Rhonda. Help me, Rhonda. I gotcha. Felicia, Dorita, Esther, Ted, I believe, and Rhonda. Anybody else?
Kiana from Ohio.
Kiana. Gotcha. Anybody else? Okay, let's go with that. We'll circle back. We should have time to circle back and see if we have anybody else. So I got Felicia, Dorita, Esther, I think it was Ted, Rhonda, and Kiana. Let's if just mute yourself again if you're not Felicia. And Felicia, good morning to you.
Good morning, Larry. Thank you for your service. And thank you so much, Julie, for your service this morning. It was very, very helpful to me. My question is, when your toddler is struggling, the internal toddler, is there anything you do additionally to help settle that down? Anything in your 11-step prayer morning or evening routine that you might add in to help when things, you know, life isn't going exactly how you would hope? Thank you.
That is so good. That is so good. A lot of the fear prayer almost, but what has been helpful is, you know, a sheet of paper, and it just drawing a line down that sheet of paper, and on one side it's just listing out the fear, you know, the fears that I'm having, and then referring to the big book, the fear prayer, it's just, you know, perhaps there is a better way, and I think so, because I'm now on a different basis. It's the basis of trusting and relying upon you, God. And it's basically sitting in that 11-step like meditation, or just in silence, you know, for a few minutes, setting a timer. And you know, what would you have me be instead? God, please remove this fear. What would you have me be instead? And then, you know, just waiting for that higher power, like waiting for that wisdom. And also, I find that it's like a season of scaling back a little bit sometimes that I have to do. You know, maybe I'm putting too much, maybe there's just too much pressure on the toddler. like maybe there's just too much pressure where I have to kind of scale back a little bit, like a season of no, a little bit. And really connecting with quality. We are all quality people, but you know those relationships with these people, like, you know, within our OA family that you have these like really close connections with, just really making that like quality conversations with quality people. Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Felicia. Okay, next up we have Dorita, followed by Esther. Hey, Dorita, good morning.
Hi, Larry. My name is Dorita Pippen, and I'm from Cleveland, Ohio, so I'm familiar with the area.
Yes.
Yeah, Akron. My question is, you seem like a very pleasant person, and because you're new, that's probably the only reason why our paths has not crossed. But I've been in program since 1999, and my question is, can you, because it sounds like you've done maybe all the steps, if you've gotten to step 9, can you please maybe describe like your hardest, your hardest amends, maybe could you describe to us if there is one? That's my question.
Oh, it's so good. That's really good. I like that. Well, I'm going to have a surprising answer even for me. You know, I have those. By the way, I'm still kind of working through some, I'm always in the steps, right? Like, I'm always like, can I live a bit better? Can I treat someone like more kind, you know? And they all seemed very daunting at first, but when I got real simple about it and listened to my sponsor's suggestion of just an index card and that an amends is not always an apology, and now usually it was for me in my amends, I did have to apologize. But when I actually came up to that point and I have that card in front of me and I've asked that person for a few minutes of their time, I was met with such a willingness and like a desire to do it and just like a releasing of the outcome that it wasn't necessarily hard when it got to that point. Now, there are harder people, though. You know, my husband, I had to kind of be like, hey, like, I need to show up better in the home. Like, I got to be more kind and not as controlling of him. Like, that's been hard. And that's the reason that that's hard, too, is because I want to appear perfect to him. And I also have to now live that way. And so it's actually like the living out that has been hard, too. But actually making the amends, if I just am diligent about setting aside that time, I found that it kind of comes a little bit easier, and God gives me that spurt of willingness, like that desire, even if it's just for 20 minutes, like I have this desire to talk to this person. And I'm sure if I had a little bit more time to think, I could think of some really tough ones that were probably tough for me, but I did anyway.
All right. Thanks, Dorita. Okay. We have Esther followed by Ted. Good morning, Esther. Esther, star one.
I'm here. Hi, how are you?
Oh, there you are. Good morning.
Hi, Esther.
Okay, I'm Esther from Georgia. How long it took you to get up early? Like, you know, I got up early, but sometimes, like, you know, to do your routine, like a half an hour, 45 minutes, how long it took you to do it? Like, you know, how to master it, that's the best thing that
yeah.
I can ask you.
And so to clarify, you're just asking like how much to get up early for, like how much earlier?
Yeah, like, you know, how long it took you to master that? Like, you'd be able, like, you know, for example, 5:30, 6, if you want to get up 5:30, how long it took you to like sort of like not being too hard for you?
Yes. Gotcha. Well, that's a good question. I want to say it was probably just like, you know, gradual, but I can tell you what I do now. And it's basically the math that I have now. So like, let's say I have to leave the house by like, my goal is like seven, like leave the house by like 7. Then for me, I usually do my best to try to like get up 2 hours earlier. And that's to sort of be gentle about my process, like in the morning. So like, I usually do about a half hour of like prayer meditation time, that on awakening time. And then the time that it's going to take me to pack that bag, like to put the containers together to measure the food and to also eat. Like, I also prefer to have my breakfast like before I leave the house. It doesn't always work that way because I can work really early morning hours. But I kind of like do the reverse engineer of like, okay, for me right now, what's working is like a 2 hour beforehand to just allow for that time in there. And I can still run late. But I hope that helped. I'm sorry. I feel like I'm definitely not the expert.
No, that's great. Thank you for the question, Esther. Okay, Ted, and then Rhonda. Ted, good morning.
Good morning, everybody. Thanks. My name is Ted. I'm a compulsive eater and binger from New Jersey. Just to give a little background. I'm almost on a year, my question's around is socializing. I wanted to know how you were when you're in the food as far as socializing relationships versus how you are now, because I was. How's your relationships improved or with work as well? And because when I came in, I only stuck to my girlfriend because I didn't want to get out of my shell so socially. So I just that's my question. What was it like before and after with your socialization skills and all that, please?
Yeah. Well, I can just, the picture that I'm having is like at my in-laws, like for Christmas or for the holidays, and there's a huge spread, right? And before being abstinent and working a program, and I've been in OA since 2019. And so back and forth, and then fully abstinent for the last over 2 years. And, before I was just a magnet to that table, to the counter, and just, all like my little plates and just trying to and then getting full and feeling uncomfortable and then kind of not participating in what anybody else is doing, maybe getting a part of the conversation that was gossipy or maybe, just not participating in the wellness of the event and just being so consumed with what was out to eat. And I always thought that if it's out, then that's what I'm going to have, that's what I'm going to eat. And so when I am abstinent, in my abstinence, I show up to that same event. And by the way, I first was abstinent the week of Thanksgiving. So just a few days before Thanksgiving, I decided I'm going to be entirely abstinent. And so it's possible, no matter if it's a Monday or the new year or anything like that. And so I show up to the same event. I have my food with me because I've packed it. I'm not at the level right now of my program to where I'm going to rely on the host for their food. I think I need to kind of get in cahoots with my mother-in-law. Does the turkey have any hidden ingredients? Most of them do have the ingredient that I'm not really, it doesn't help me. So I bring my food. And then when it's time for the meal, this is what I do, and it actually really works. And I do it for all the holidays. I'll bring my food. Usually I have a meal before, I'll try to time it out where I don't show up somewhere hungry. I would rather eat in my car before I go in somewhere or, eat before I leave and go to somewhere social than to be so consumed in my head of when meal time is going to be. Cause my disease will still focus on like when is meal time, so I try not to go somewhere if I can help it like too hungry. But luckily the meal times have all kind of worked out in that way to where, it's time for one of my meals. It's also time for the family meal. And while everyone else is busy getting their plate ready, guess what? I am too. I've taken a plate that the host has, and I'm putting my food onto my plate. And really the reality of it is that everyone is so consumed with what they're doing and eating is that especially on these larger holidays, socializing, they're so consumed with what they're eating and what the food is that they're really not looking at what I'm doing. And I can sit there. I can be a part of the meal. I actually say the prayer before the meal for the family. And then I can help and be of service afterwards and before, just asking if there's something I can do or just being present instead of being like a hunter and gatherer at events. I'm more so just trying to be peaceful or, ask my sister-in-laws how they're doing, just making it a little bit more not about the food, just more people focused if I can be. Yeah.
Okay, thanks for the question, Ted. Okay, next up we have Rhonda, followed by Kiana. Rhonda, good morning.
Good morning. This is Rhonda, compulsive overeater from Ohio. My question has two parts. The first is, would you repeat the prayer that you say at meal times?
Yeah.
And the second is, would you elaborate a little bit more about how you deal with the overwhelm and powerlessness? You mentioned that you use them interchangeably. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Thank you as well. Okay, so the prayer before the meal, and I'll just say the full thing. This is what I say. Oh, my Creator, thank you for creating this meal. Thank you for the time set aside to eat it, the willingness to put it together, and the effort to gather the food. Please allow this food to feed recovery, not addiction. Allow it to give me the strength to do your will and the knowledge of your will and the willingness to do your will. Help me to relax and take it easy, not to struggle. Please take over the management of my life and everything about me. Thank you for hope, years of abstinence, my amazing sponsor, my nutritionist, my food plan, helping others, and a healthy body weight, truly. Please show me the next right action towards recovery after the meal and during. You alone are my ultimate awe. The only relief I have is through you. Thank you for OA. And I say the ultimate awe because it's like another line I say is like, may I stop turning to food for the comfort that you give me, God. Like, you are my ultimate awe. Like, may I not search for comfort outside of you. And then your other question, Miss Rhonda, about powerless and overwhelm. Was there a question specifically? Because those are their own special editions.
I think she's just looking for elaborating on how you deal with that.
I mean, gosh, powerless. I mean, powerless is just like, it's the realization that there's something around my foot and I'm sinking down. Like, I can tell I'm agitated, I'm annoyed, I'm even powerless over anger. And so I have to then like turn to the Father of Light, like I have to turn to God and say, God, like I'm overtaken by this thought. You know, for me right now, I really want to change desks at my office. Like, it's just, I think my whole life would be better if I sat at a different spot. Like, and then I can just get so focused on that. And so I have to admit to God, and I'm like, God, I am overwhelmed by the thought of where I sit at work. Please. Like, I can't, like, just, and it's like my own words. Like, I can't, I'm worried that I'm going to fixate on it. I'm not going to be okay. And I need your help, God. Like, I am powerless over this thought. You know, please restore me to sanity. Like, take it. So basically, powerless can equal overwhelm for me. Like, that word can be interchanged.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
All right. Next up, we have Kiana. Kiana, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you so much for your service, and thank you for your share, Julie. My question to you is dealing with other people's attitudes and emotions and wanting to help. And my question is specifically, what prayer do you say when you find yourself feeling that? And then outside of the prayer, what action do you take when you find yourself in that place? Thanks.
Yes. Gosh, such a good question. So I'm understanding, like, the question is like how to deal like with other people's emotions, or if I'm finding myself focusing on that. You know, OA introduced me to the 12 steps in a way that like I'm a believer. Like, you know, knowing how it was before, how it is now, looking at even like a before and after, I don't even take before and afters like of my body, but if like we were to look at like what it did for me physically, like I'm a believer in the 12 steps. And so I have also sought out the 12 steps in other programs. And so for me, what I really is important to me is healthy relationships and thinking about others in healthier ways. And so I have explored, and I do work the steps in in another couple of programs. And so I that has helped me. And then, you know, it's basically, and I don't want to mention like an outside program, so I won't, but, you know, basically admitting to God that I'm powerless over this other person's, like, over this other person's attitude. And God, please help me not to make this person my higher power. What they do, what they say, what they don't do. And to remember that the best thing that I can do for anyone is to recover, recover, recover. And what I found is, you know, just praying that, and also the thinking of, like, perhaps it's just coexistence. Maybe I just need to coexist with this person, like, whatever that means for you and in your program, Kiana, like, how can I better just coexist with this person? And acceptance, there's a couple words, a couple alternate words that I have for acceptance, and it's non-resistance. And also like neutrality. And what I picture is being in like a car wash, and we're asked to put the car in neutral, and then the car just goes so smoothly through this like wash, and it's peaceful, and there's no noise hardly, and it's like soapy, and it's just that neutralness. That's acceptance for me. Like, that is just like, can I put my car in neutral, and then can I just trust that it's going to get cleaned? I can just chill out. And, you know, because it's all about making others my high. Like, whenever I'm in that fixation, I have made that other person in control of my thoughts and my life. Not sure if that's helpful.
Thanks, Kiana. Okay,
thank you,
we
Kiana.
Still have time. Yeah, we still have time for more questions. If you have a question for Julie, press star one and give me your first name. What was the question?
Nancy from New Jersey.
Nancy?
Michelle WC.
Well, Michelle?
Anayeta.
Anayeta?
Karen KZ in Missouri.
Gotcha, Karen.
CK.
Was that CK?
CK in California.
Okay. I have CK. So, well, Nancy, Michelle, Anayeta, Karen, CK. Anybody else? Okay, let's go with that. So we'll go with Nancy, followed by Michelle. Nancy, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you so much for your service. Julie, thank you so much. It sounds like your program is very solid and very developed. I mean, you have prayers and you have visualizations. My question is, as a person who is really in the food at the moment, I live in New Jersey and I'm stuck in a snowstorm, and there's a lot of food in my refrigerator that I don't know what to do about. Do I throw, because I have a husband and three children, and I bought all this food, and it's all food that triggers me. It's doesn't matter what it is. What would you say, like, I know about, I'd love to get where you are and visual. What would you say for the next 24 hours? I woke up and I played with my dog and I prayed that I wouldn't eat those things that I have done over and over. So if you could answer that, what is your strength and hope for, you know, for the day? Where should I start?
Yeah.
Do I? Thank you.
Yeah. Gosh, what a rich, there are so many like beautiful things that you've just like turned over. And I truly believe that the fact that you like even just got onto the line and said something, like I do believe that like you will feel some reprieve with that because you're admitting, like you've just admitted that like I'm overwhelmed. So there's a few other things too. And I'm sure there's a lot more suggestions out there. What was coming to mind is some wisdom that I got, which was to stay in my own food. And what that means is that I have a husband, I have two girls, and they eat all the things that are right in the center of my like bullseye of not to eat. And what I discovered real quick from another fellow, which was so I was so grateful for, was just to stay in my own food. So what that means was I was trying to get everybody to be on a food, like to eat three meals a day and one snack. We're not going to snack anymore, guys. That does not work. Like, it just doesn't work for me to control anybody else's food. So those things can still exist in my house. Now, I will say that, you know, especially beginning abstinence, and then there's sometimes when my emotions are really high or there's a lot of stress at work or even within the home, there's some conflict going on where I can't look at that specific food. I will either like move it and put it into the cabinet, or I'll be like, babe, like I need you to not put this out. Like, just know that like I'm being like, not that I feel like I'm going to lose my abstinence, but it's just, it's taking up too much space in my head. So I'll ask for it to be put away, or especially like just starting out with abstinence, it's these hard conversations that we have to have with people in our lives. Like I had to, just like my sponsor did, she had to sit down with her husband. I had to sit down with my husband and say, hey, like, I know it doesn't seem like a big deal, like what's going on or like what I'm needing to do now, but this is life or death for me. And I had to have like a real conversation about it to him. So he's very truly supportive, like if stuff needs to get put away, but it doesn't usually bother me. I also would look ahead at your day, sit down with that like next right action prayer, so to speak, in the big book on page 87. And what I would do is just sit there, like, you know, set your timer 5 minutes or something and just ask God, like, you know, I welcome you into my food plan for the day and every day, God, but, you know, can you just please direct my attention to what food you want me to have today? And I, because God is so good and he gives us when we ask, like he will place the foods that he wants you to have today. And I would probably just turn that over to someone within program, you know, and like it's the whole committing before we actually eat. That's a lot of wisdom there. And then I would focus on some outreach, like making three outreach calls your goal today. And get, you know, some conversation around program and get the strength of the program. It's a we program. It's the power of we. Like, we cannot do this alone. We have to turn to each other.
Thank you so much, Nancy. Okay, next up we have Michelle, followed by Hannah Yetta. Michelle, good morning.
Hi, good morning. This is Michelle WC in California. My question for you is, you mentioned service and that you do service as being a treasurer. I'm curious, do you also sponsor, and what does sponsoring look like for you in terms of, like, do you talk to the person every day? Would just love to hear a little more about how you sponsor, if you do.
Thank you. Yes, I absolutely sponsor. It's been a little bit hard. Like, I will admit, I sponsor in two other programs. Like, I love working and love sponsorship. Like, sponsoring is like really fruitful for me, but it also really brings out like a lot of like the different character defects. And but what I have found is that it's been a little bit of a struggle. I do sponsor. I'm an available sponsor, and the way that I went through the steps, it's kind of like it's real structured. Like, and that worked for me. I got like a, you know, from my sponsor, just, you know, here's what you got to do, and then we'll meet. And, you know, very like, I don't want to say black or white, because it's not necessarily a good thing in our program to be black and white thinking, but it was very like, here's what you got to do. And it was a little bit like, I went into a, what do they call it, hospitalization period, where I didn't go to restaurants for while I was going through the steps. And so that was like radical. You know, some people I find they call my program like radical, or that it's like really strict, or which I don't think that it is, but it's been a little bit hard. But how I take people through is the way that I was brought through. That's just what I know in OA. So like, that's really, it's this very structured way to do it, I guess. Yeah, not the best answer, but it's the truth.
That was good. Thank you. No, not at all. Thanks, Michelle, for the question. Okay, we have Hannah Yetta, followed by Karen. Hannah Yetta, good morning.
Good morning, Larry. Thank you for your service. And Julie, oh my gosh, I just found so much experience, strength, and hope in what you were saying. I didn't have a question until you said something about fighting anger. What did you say? Something about how you dealt with anger.
Mm-hmm.
And, do you remember that?
I can
do it in a question and an answer. Anyway, I have a really hard time with anger. and I get angry easy. And I try to pause, and I do pause, and now sometimes I'll pause in the middle, but just don't want to be angry.
Mm.
Okay, any experience or some help you have with that?
Honeyetta, I am like right there with you. Like I really get that. And what has helped has been help of my sponsor, sharing that with her, and then getting some like tangible things to do in the moment. So like a lot of like reframing too, because my brain, my disease wants to just go to like, this person really has it out for me. They're trying to make me mad. They're trying to get at me. But I have to like pause. And when I say pause, what's been helpful for me is like thinking of three things where it's like, okay, what are three things I can see right now? What are three things that I can hear? What are three things that I can feel? And doing that along with some like real deep breaths and like, there's something called box breathing that really helps me, where it's like an inhale for four counts, hold, exhale for four counts, hold. And it's just the pause, because my brain, if I take a tone a certain way, or if I assume something about that person, like it's going to go into this fight or flight. I'm angry. Here we go again. I'm crashing. So I just have to just do my best to calm my body down a bit. And just calm, like just to get more perspective of like, and the reframe too is like, this person left me out of their plan for the day. They didn't include me when they were trying to make their plan. But hey, actually, like maybe the reframe is that they were considering that maybe I was like busy, or they know I've been under a lot of stress and they want to not bother me with stuff. So they're trying to like filter, like there's it's so hard though. I know. There's one other thing that someone shared that I thought was pretty helpful. And it's that where there's anger, there's non-acceptance. And I still don't really know exactly what that means, but it really was powerful. And I start to think like acceptance, another way I think of acceptance is, can I be happy about this thing? Like, is there a way that I can accept that I have a 19 and 16 year old? You know, is there a way that I can be happy? There's the reframe, you know?
Thanks, Honeyetta. Appreciate that. Okay, next up we have Karen followed by CK. Karen, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you, Larry. And thank you, Julie. This is Karen Casey in Missouri, recovered. And Julie, thank you for being a fresh new voice for me. And the way that you spoke about things in a way that was different made a huge difference to me. I'm going to have to go back and I'm going to transcribe it or something, because you said so many things. And when you shared that prayer that somebody asked for, you said it. I couldn't even write it down in shorthand. It was too fast. So I'm going to text you, and I'm going to ask you for it because
sure,
I love
it.
I think it would make a huge difference. And also you said about Dr. Bob's prayer, and I went out on AI and asked about it, and you said more than that. So, I mean, I just got like, God, please guide me in my thinking, remove all wrong motives, and help me to do that. I will. That's what the AI said. But I think you said more than that. So what did you say?
Yes. So Dr. Bob's prayer is like, it's his third step prayer, Dr. Bob's. And I'm sure AI would tell me way more other things about that. But no, there's an actual third step prayer used from Dr. Bob.
It's different than the one that we use, though, in the book.
It's different than the one that we use in the book.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Well, how do I find that?
I mean, gosh, let's see. Probably don't do AI for that one specifically. I would just search like Google third step prayer by Dr. Bob, but then look at the images, because sometimes the images can have like an actual like stamp of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
I would say it right now,
right,
but it's
now
quite long.
Yeah, please. I know, but I'm gonna take it down and shorten it if I can.
Okay. All right. I'll read it. I'm fine with reading.
Okay.
Okay. The third step prayer used by Dr. Bob. Dear God, I'm sorry about the mess I've made of my life. I want to turn away from all the wrong things I've ever done and all the wrong things I've ever been. Please forgive me for it all. I know you have the power to change my life and can turn me into a winner. Thank you, God, for getting my attention long enough to interest me in trying it your way. God, please take over the management of my life and everything about me. I am making this conscious decision to turn my will and my life over to your care, and I'm asking you to please take over all parts of my life. Please, God, move into my heart. However you do it is your business, but make yourself real inside of me and fill my awful emptiness. Fill me with your love and Holy Spirit and make me know your will for me. And now, God, help yourself to me and keep on doing it. I'm not sure I want you to, but do it anyhow. I rejoice that I am now a part of your people, that my uncertainty is gone forever, and that you now have control of my will and my life. Thank you, and I praise your name. Amen.
Great.
That's so good.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Thanks, Karen,
so
for that. And yes. Yeah, we'll wrap it up with a question from CK, I believe I have. CK?
Peace. Can I be heard?
You can.
Hey, CK.
Okay, awesome. Peace, family. This is CK in California. Thank you so much, Julie. I mean, your share and then that beautiful prayer. Just thank you. Thank you for your service today. Mm-hmm. So this idea of baby and toddler really resonates with me because, like, today is just day 469 for me. So my recovery is a baby, you know, I'm a baby in program. And in recovery, I realized that I've been letting my life be run by my inner children. My entire life has been either run by a 4-year-old or a teenager. And recovery has shown me that. And so I was wondering if you, for me, I have to spend time with my inner children every morning, being a loving parent, or otherwise they will, like, be unruly all day long. And I was wondering if you have a practice for working with your inner children. Like, what do you do? Do you intentionally work with your inner children at all?
I think that might be down the line for me, CK, like the different ways of, like, working with, like, an inner child. I don't exactly resonate fully, like, in my like realm of recovery right now, but I always assume that I'm going to be doing, like, almost every program probably, or just exploring, like, the different rungs of recovery. But what I will say that's been really helpful is sort of like a two-way prayer, which I think is like when God is talking back to me, it comes from, like, a very, like, parental voice. So, like, for instance, what I'll do is, like, on one side of the paper or on one page, I'll write to God. And sometimes it's not a lot. It's just like, please help me. Or it's like, I'm feeling this. It's a lot of, like, I do realize that it's a lot of feelings that I have to admit that I have. And, you know, even just writing down, like, I'm frustrated, or I feel like disrespected, or I feel sad. I feel left out. You know, those are, like, real emotions that I have that I'm sure an inner child or children everywhere feel at some point. But what's really beautiful is, like, turning that page, or now I'm going to have the willingness, because sometimes I don't always have the willingness and I'll just write down what I want to write down, but I don't have the time for God, or I want to just get up and go, or I forget to even, like, listen for him. But then when I do sort of turn that page to do the two-way prayer, I write on the other side of the page, God, I love like leading with, like, a term of endearment. So a lot of times God is like Jujubee or my dear precious daughter, and that to me is the parent talking back, you know, where he's like, a lot of times it's just like, I love you. I have you, you know, rest in me. deep breaths today. And then he kind of gives me like some things to do a lot of the times as well. So it's like rerouting my brain and just, you know, so that's sort of where I tend to like the reparenting now, but that's just not really a part of my, like, that verbiage, I guess, around the inner child. I more so just use it in that way. And I love you, CK. It's so good to hear from you.
Thanks, CK. And thanks to everyone, especially Julie B. From Ohio for the presentation this morning. Julie, wonderful job. We're so appreciative and of your generous time this morning. And let me give the share ID again for Julie's presentation this morning. That number is 23,156. That's 23156. We're going to now close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164. And then we'll get, at the end of the recording, we'll ask Julie for her contact information. So from page 164, our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. Obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.